The Gross Profit Podcast is your one-stop shop on the path to profitability. Each week, we share authentic advice on the positive, practical steps you can take to make the company you love more profitable. If you're looking for a positive plan to help you avoid common spending mistakes, control costs, and increase your profits, then this is the place for you. I'm Ryan Cowden, and this week we're joined by James Kennedy and Garrett Carraher. In this episode of the Gross Profit Podcast, James and Garrett analyze the ideas presented in the book Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. Mike Michalowicz is a celebrated author and speaker who has led a successful career in accounting and business. He recently released his latest book, Profit First, which offers up some groundbreaking ideas about how to build profit. Today, James and Garrett present the main ideas of this book and engage in an open discussion about them. Drawing from several years of experience, they use this conversation to openly consider these new ideas and their implications for business owners and accountants. On this episode, you'll hear the core ideas found in the book Profit First. The traditional view of profit holds that your profit consists of what is left over after you deduct your expenses from your sales. The new view, put forward by Mike Michalowicz, suggests that you make profit your priority, taking out the profit you want first and running the business on the rest of your money. Next, we'll talk about the profit margins your business should aim for. There is no single right answer, but you can find what the normal profit margins are for companies in your field. Find out what those margins are and aim for those. Then we'll talk about how to divide your money. This theory taps into ideas about human psychology and claims that you should be dividing your money up into 5 separate accounts, including one for your profit, to help you get to the profit you desire. And finally, we'll share some other useful practices to increase your profit. We'll talk about how strategic budgeting and quarterly payouts can actually have a big impact on your profit margins. If you're looking for some powerful new ways to think about profit, then this is one episode you won't want to miss. There is a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's our conversation with James and Garrett.
Good morning or good afternoon, listeners. It's afternoon here in Dublin. We are coming to you recording live, as they say. I'm joined once again by my partner in crime or finance, let's call it, the secret CFO, Garrett Carraher. How are you, Garrett?
Good, good. There's no crime here, James. There's no crime here, just in case anyone from the revenue is listening. There's certainly no crime. Yeah, it's all good. I've had a super busy week and, you know, messing around at work. How have you been?
I've been great. Always amuses me how careful two groups of people are, lawyers and accountants, about any suggestion of impropriety, and they get very confuffled altogether. So it's okay. I'm sure the revenue understand lighthearted banter when they hear it, maybe a little bit of sarcasm colloquially. I'm sure they are okay with non-traditional use of the English language.
I think that just highlights your lack of experience of the revenue, James. It just shows me you've never actually talked to anyone in revenue. You've never had a meeting with them. You know, they will just meet, you know, they're like the guards or the police. You know, there's no joking with these guys. You know what I mean? They take everyone so seriously. Anything with money, they're all over us, you know.
Well, funnily enough, I did have quite a dealing with the revenue in a past life. Yeah, maybe we should talk about that sometime.
Right, tell you about an interesting one, yeah.
I can tell you about the audit that my accountant triggered for me. God love him. That was great crack.
Right.
That's another day's story. But today we are talking about profits, my favorite topic. And given that we are the Gross Profit Podcast, I read the book Profit First. Great headline, Garrett, immediately caught my attention as a business owner, as I'm sure you can imagine.
I can imagine, yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing about it. I know you've read it. You have a good understanding of the concepts. And I'm just quite interested to hear, you know, how it works and then I'll give you back my own thoughts on it then.
Yeah. So for once, I'm going to be the one dropping the knowledge on this podcast. And first thing is, so I came across Profit First. It's been a few years now I've been aware of it. I heard on some other podcasts, I think they talked about it on Rogue Startups, where I heard about it first. It's by a guy called Mike Michalowicz, and I hope I am pronouncing that correctly. He is American. He's written a number of books, The Pumpkin Plan, and now this is a big one, though, Profit First. And he is a speaker. He's an accountant. He is in business. You know, he owns a a small business manufacturing leather goods, as I understand it. And I listened to the audiobook, which was excellent because it was actually, as he's a speaker, he was very good actually reading his own books. And I would recommend it because he maybe get the paper copy and the audiobook because he adds a few extra bits of tips in the audiobook you don't get in the book itself. But it is a great title. And I don't want to say the title is misleading, but it's definitely selling the sizzle. It's a lot more. Going into this, I thought basically this was going to be one concept, which was pay yourself first, which you see in some other financial advice books. I'm pretty sure the Big Dad or Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or some of those financial advice books recommend, you know, paying yourself first, i.e. take out your savings or take out your tax and everything first and make sure you pay everyone else after that, which is generally a good rule. But this is a lot more than that, actually, when you get into it. And it's far more about dealing with the emotional turmoil that comes with running a small business. I would say this book is best suited to small business owners who have become successful. So they've gone over the lip from being an employee to self-employed to employing people. And I'd say it kicks in it probably from the very start. If you had these practices, I say it would be worthwhile. And you are up to the point where you get a full-time commercial accountant on your team. That's probably where it brings it up to. And maybe you could bring some of the principles past that. But I'd certainly say it's mostly aimed at people who are sort of before that. So they're still working with a bookkeeper or a professional accountant who to do their taxes every, you know, outsourced accountant every period. And the core principle comes that just like that, traditionally, your profit is equal to your sales minus your expenses. And subtly, he changes it slightly in that he says that he takes your sales, your turnover, you take out what profit you believe you should take out, and the remainder is what you have to run the business with. So he kind of contrarian view there. And the first thing that I found very interesting was that he actually provides a table to give you an idea of what sort of profit you should be running at different sizes of business. So, Garrett, is it true that in your experience that the bigger you get as a company, the less profit percentage you're going to get away with?
I think it's more, it's not by the size of the company, from my experience, it's more the industry. So if you look at companies, say in food, food is super competitive. So, you know, I can see, I'm looking up this fellow on his website. I can see him here, he's super smiley, but any fellow that spends as much time as he does in the gym, I'm just going to worry about his principles here. Whereas I would bring in a principle to you, which is Porter's Five Forces, a well-known academic who, Michael Porter, who's written the business books. And in his business book, he wouldn't talk about the size of a company. He would talk about the five forces acting on a company, you know, which is like your purchasing power, the power of your customers, new entrants to the market, competition in the market. And there's another one which just escapes me. I'm sure it'll come back to me. But he would talk about that. So that would actually more affect the profitability of a company rather than the size of a company. So if you think about the food industry, it's highly competitive. There's low barriers of entry to new people. If you're a manufacturer of food, like a farmer or a producer of food, you don't manufacture food. Obviously, if you're a producer, you're only selling to supermarkets. So you have low bargaining power there because the supermarkets are your only way to get your product out there. So that's another problem for you. And then you're buying off people who supply you with seeds or whatever to supply you with fertilizer and different things like that. And you might have a bit of bargaining power on that side, but probably not because you're quite small. Usually the producers are small. So when you look at something like that, the Porter's Five Forces would tell you food production is a bad sector or industry to get into. And it would also tell you immediately that the profit would be quite low. Whereas you look at tech and different other things, it can be much higher. So that would be my experience on that one anyway.
Oh, yeah, the well-known high-profit tech industry. I know how that works. So, listen, Porter's Five Forces is great, but let's face it, it's a snooze fest because it doesn't really tell you how much profit you should get. What's much more interesting is Mike McCallowitz's table. He has it all laid out here. So if you're earning up to 250K a year, so you're probably self-employed, maybe one or two employers, half of that should really be going on your owner's pay, owner's comp, as you would call it, compensation. You can probably have 5% profit. So a large profit margin. And no matter what type of company you're in, I mean, unless you're taking that out, you're probably doing it wrong, right? Now, there is this idea that no matter what you do in life, if you're the best at it, you will get very well compensated. I'm sure that if you're the right type of, let's say, traditionally low pay industry, cleaning, for example, you might not get very well paid cleaning a supermarket, but maybe if you clean space shuttles, or you got way better paid. So no matter what you're in, respective industry, I'd say under a certain amount, at least you'd aim at that. If you can't aim towards getting 55% analyst comp and profit together, if your business is doing 250K, you're doing something wrong. You should at least push yourself to get to that, you know? How do you feel about that, Garrett?
I'm going to say that is BS. I just don't believe that for one moment. You know, that's more like, you know, what would you call it? A contractor, sorry, is one thing, or consultant, you know? That's what I think a consultant could do.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, if you have a consultant, you can probably get today's market in Dublin, work for the government or something, you get 190 grand maybe.
Yeah.
And more or less, that's, you know, that's, you take out your tax, you take out your transport costs maybe, and that's a good, it's got to be at least, 50% profit, 60%.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And then as you go up to different scales, up to 500K, then you should profit. Your owner's comp should shrink to 35%. So your owner's comp shrinks as the scale goes up. Profit slowly goes up. By the time you get to 1 million, you should be aiming for 10% profit, 10% owner's comp. And I get your point about the industry totally. And he actually recommends that in the book. But the first point is, if you have within your industry, whatever your industry is, you should go and try and research and find out, well, what are the best companies doing in terms of profit and owner's comp? What is possible? Benchmark yourself and then actually set that goal. So, you know, he recommends looking and look at, it's hard. If you have a smaller business, that might be tricky. Maybe could you use Companies House for figures there to have a look at industry types, Garrett?
Sure, you could. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I've often wondered about these, you know, where do you get the information from? But there is lots of statistics out there, like Mintel and these different things will provide you, you know, with business research statistics that you can look at and see, you know, once you reach a certain size, obviously, they'll tell you, you know, for this sector, for these many employees, how much should your business be earning on a percentage wise, you know? And I think that's a super good point you made, James. Like, that's what everyone should really be doing. Anyone listening to this should go investigate that. Understand then for their sector, for their size of company, for their revenue, for their number of employees, what should they expect to be hitting on their gross profit and then on their net profit percentage, and really dig into those numbers. And then if you're not hitting them, you know, you need to be able to explain why. This is what I always say. It's not the numbers. They're only telling you a story. They're telling you about either something good has happened, or they're telling you some problem or some issue. And really what you need to do is really dig into the why. Why is your percentage down? Why is your percentage up? Why is this down? Why is your revenue down? Why is your revenue flying? You need to understand the why. And once you understand that, then you can make good business decisions and drive your business forward.
So it'll be no surprise to our listeners to know that, you know, the secret CFO easily takes home 1 million euros each year as one of the top professionals in the industry. And so that means for the purpose of this example, half should be, or 10% will be on owner's comp, and then another 10% for profit. So whatever your target is, you set them up and you set aim is to work towards that. And the obvious objection I had here was, he said, well, it's all very well, you know, paying myself 100 grand and then taking another 200 grand in profit. But what if the business can't afford it?
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? That's why I can't understand, but I'm sure you're probably going to get to it. Like, how is he working this out? Is he saying that you need to, based on his table, he's saying that you need to take this profit? Or is he saying, you know, look up the industry and then book that in? Or, you know, you wouldn't start taking it from day one, would you? You'd kind of see how it's going after 6 months, and you may be taking off to keep it going. And then you say after 6 months, well, actually in the bank, we're on track to hit this number. So let's start taking the cash. Or how does it work in practice?
Well, my go-to move is going to be loading up a load of credit cards, but it turns out he has a better plan than that.
We must do a podcast on credit card fraud. Surely that is our niche area at this stage. You know what I mean? You know, it would go down very well with the listeners.
So I like his approach. So he takes a similar approach to, and you know, I recommend people, if this whets your appetite, go and read the book. This may be a bit of a poor man's explanation, but I like his approach. He takes an analogy, which is, the problem is not the math. The problem is the people and the psychology of dealing with a little bit. What does the hair shampoo people say? You're worth it. Well, you're worth it. You have to say that it normalized the idea of that much profit is actually normal. People in the top performers in your sector do achieve those levels of compensation and profit. So why not you? Or you certainly should be aiming for it, you know, or something's wrong. But the next thing he does is he borrows from, you know, dieting advice. And so, for example, what he does is physically, when you're on a diet, you often hear the advice, use a smaller plate, make your food look like more. And he takes a similar approach in that he says that what you do is you set up a number of, he calls them foundational accounts. You have one account where your suppliers will pay you into, or your vendor, or your customers rather, will pay you into. And as soon as the money hits that, or twice a month on the 10th and the 25th, you split that cash out straight away. The first thing you do is you give the government their money. And when he says that, he means that tax is there, is the government's money. It's not your money. You know, sales tax and income tax, it belongs to the government. So you straight away have to put that into another account in a separate bank you do not have online access to. That might sound horrific in today's modern times, but the whole point is to get that money away from you. It was never yours in the first place, and you should just make sure you don't get into trouble. Here in Ireland, the government gives you 18 months sort of break. You don't have to make tax returns in the first 18 months. Oftentimes, people get into trouble straight away because they use that tax money, which should have gone to the government, because eventually they do collect it. They use it to get the business going, and they're always on the back foot after that. And they're probably, if I had to guess, there's, you know, 50% of businesses fail each year. A good another 25%, if I were to guess, are marginal businesses that never really get into profit because they always use that tax money. Rather get investment or save it up or do whatever, but don't use the government's money. So that's the first thing. I think you'd agree with that, Garrett. Get that government money out of the way, no?
Yeah, well, I think what he's referring to here in his book, and it is actually been proven, is a book by Daniel Kahneman and also Richard Taylor. And also another fellow called Steven Pinker. And they have written books about psychology. There's psychologists. I'm actually, as you know, I've done a higher diploma in psychology myself. And this has helped me to understand the way people think, although not you, James, but I'm still working on that one. But Richard Taylor has written a great book called Nudge. And Daniel won actually the Nobel Prize for economics, I think it was, or for psychology. But, anyway, in the book, Richard Taylor's book on Nudge, what he was able to prove is that if people put money aside into different pots and call the pots, you know, a new car, mortgage, budget, holiday, whatever, they actually won't spend the money because they see the money as different as to do with this. It's to do with, I think, a sunk cost fallacy, and also the moving money into different pots makes you think differently about the cash and where it's going to go to, and makes it, you know, so if you've all the money in your one bank account, you just see it as, this is all the money here, I can spend this money. It's hard for you to differentiate between it. Whereas if you use the technique, and I think it's the technique you described there of moving money to different bank accounts, I don't know, I don't even think it matters if it's hard to get to or not. If you just move it to another bank account and rename the bank account as tax money or revenue money or whatever you want to call it, or, you know, R&D investment or capital expenditure, whatever you want to call it, you look at the money differently then. So when you're doing your accounts each month or thinking, hey, you know, can I afford to hire a new employee? Can I afford to spend that money on a new laptop or a new company car or new phone or whatever? So then you think, well, actually in my bank account, I only have so much money, you know, and you don't actually look at the other accounts because you think they're separate, even though it's all your money and even though you can do what you want with it, for just the renaming of it and putting it into a different bucket or a different jar, it just, in your mind, it separates it out. So actually, there's good science behind that idea. And that actually idea, I think, would work quite well for a lot of people, a lot of businesses.
Yeah, I've seen a budgeting system where you use envelopes as well. People do it. They put action cards back in the day. And there's another one called YNAB. You need the budget, which uses a similar idea. So yeah, I think we're on board with this. So this gets the secret CFO seal of approval for the first account. That's good. Next up, profit. He says, put your profit away. So whatever that benchmark you aimed for. Now, this is where we get into the nitty gritty. What happens if you are starting off with zero profit, as a lot of people will be, and you figured out that best in industry is 10%? how do you just take 10% and put it away? No. What you do is you name the account, you name it profit brackets, and then he has two things, TAPS, which is target allocation percentage and current allocation percentage. And you put in TAPS, which is basically what you want to get to. So let's say 10%, and CAPS, which is what you're currently do, zero. And you start off at zero and you increase it by 1% each quarter. So you start off by saying, even if it's, you know, you're making $1 million. So on a quarterly basis or a monthly basis, making $1 million. So that's about 82,000 a month, right? And then 1% of that is 800 euro, right? So 800 euro is not a lot of money. It doesn't matter. You get into the habit of putting 1% away into a separate account, which is now locked in and will never come out of that account. Makes sense? And what we're going to do then, each quarter, you increase that percentage by 1%, because you can afford an extra 1% easily each month. Of course, where does it come from? Still needs to come from somewhere. And what you do is you go on to your next account, which is your OPEX account, and you find the 1% in that account. So you know, most businesses haven't done a rationalization in a way. You dive into your OPEX, you can eke out 1% pretty easily. I think we've done a few podcasts on how to do that. There's a range of different, and in fact, we've written a book on how to find 1% of your OPEX spend. And you allocate the saving that you found in your OPEX budget, and you give some techniques along how to identify that, go through all your OPEX spend, figure out which spend is vital, which spend is recurring. And he recommends you cancel all recurring payments, which is terrible advice because that's how we bill people. But anyway, that's what he recommends. Pay everything by check and then get rid of anything that's not necessary to running the business. So using those three, that technique, that's actually how you find the 1%. And if you need extra 1% for your similar for your tax and your owner's pay as well, your owner's pay also has a TAPS and a cap. So it also has a percentage a target allocation for what you get paid for running the business. If there's a delta there, similar situation, if you're getting 8% at the moment and the industry average is 10, you increase that to 9%. You dig another 1% out of OPEX somewhere to balance it out. And that's how you, over time, work towards your profit first objective.
So it's interesting. I have a couple of points. First point I want to say is, where can people get our great book and contact us, James, please?
So you can get book.procurementexpress.com, where you can sign up for a free chapter, and then you'll get an email where it'll tell you where you can buy a copy of the book. And it will be on Amazon soon, I think. And if not, I actually have a bunch of them here. I'll mail you one as well. So that's the first question answered.
Great. That's very good. So they can just email yourself, James. Was it james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com, isn't it?
Yeah. That's correct.
Yeah. Any questions, bind them in there to James. We're happy to answer them. So thinking about what the process you've just described there, what that sends to me is something I've always said, I probably said it a few times in the podcast, which is two things there. What measured gets done, and I really strongly believe in that. And I've seen that in practice, which I can give an example of. And second of all, it's called budgeting, because what you've done there is you've said, I'm going to come up with a budget, which is to reduce these costs so much over a period of time and increase my profit. And that's really just working out a budget. And you're just saying, these are the costs I want to have over the lifetime. And this is what I'm going to do. So it's kind of like a more of a generalized budget, isn't it? Where you set a goal. And you know, I suppose the question might be, why not 5% a quarter instead of 1%? And, you know, you'd have to think about that. So that's where you might do a budget, might be more valuable. And we've actually done a couple of podcasts on budgets. So you can go back and listen to those. And we have our template up there. You can access that and give us a shout as well. You can email James and we're happy to answer any questions on that. But I think to me, that's more like a budgeting thing. And with the budgeting, it's more detailed, because you might go through your budget and suddenly discover, actually, we're spending too much on marketing. Because everything's interconnected with a budget. So you say, okay, I need the sales to be X, and that means I need marketing to be Y, and I also need a sales manager or another salesperson to do the sales. So that's kind of more connected, where I think this book is kind of recommending more just of a generalized reduction of costs without looking at the impact on them. And that can work, but again, you need to have that into your budget. And I think, so that's the way I'd look at that one. And the other one I think about is, you know, as I said there, what gets measured gets done. And, you know, so once immediately when you start looking even at your costs and you're starting to measure them and you start to quantify them and you start to think about them more in depth, they will change. Like, that's just a fact. And they will start going down. And I think, you know, you can think about, like, you know, I think it's more individual. People should really look at their numbers and really think, what can I reduce these costs by? Because maybe in the first year, you could actually reduce your costs by 12%. But a year on year after that, it's maybe 1% a year. And so maybe there's a quicker win there and then not so much over the long term, which is what I see in a lot of businesses. And I think what gets done, even I can tell you in my own business now, recently, over the last few months, I've been working closely with a particular project manager who's been having, I wouldn't say difficulties, but maybe he wasn't just as focused on the right metrics as he should have been. And made a lot of changes there, and really, you know, it's really much just meeting with people and just talking through and showing them you're there, a bit of leadership and giving them a bit of direction, a bit of a hand up. And now they're making astronomical sales. It's been noted. The MD has said it to me. They've all copped it and they've said the profits here has increased significantly. And really, that's just down to what gets measured gets done. You know, if you follow up, if you say my focus is going to be on revenue, I guarantee your revenue change. If you say my focus is going to be on cost, I guarantee you can reduce your costs. So that's my thoughts on that one, James.
Very good. So in summary, then, the principles of the book are that you actually use, you know, different, in a mid-sized business, you work with your accounting team to use budgets. But if you're a smaller business, these are budgets. And we've discussed before, these are these accounts that they use to run this system. It's a type of budgeting. It's split out differently to how you'd see it in your financial accounts. And it's important to put them separately. Obviously, you take your profits first and you work back from there. You start off from a low base and you work yourself up, but everyone can afford an extra 1% to every quarter. I think the 1% thing, Garrett, is aimed at making it, getting going with it easier. You know,
right.
even if you can do just a minimum of 1%, you're on the road then to success. Whereas it would be just overwhelming to try and think more than that, you know, and it really removes that objection to the system. And then the other thing, the operational side of it, which is, well, I actually kind of like this as well. One last part I forgot to mention was that, you know, he says you do all your accounting on 2 days of the month, the 10th and the 25th. You pay all your bills, send out all your invoices, etc. That builds up a rhythm. And then every quarter, then you pay yourself that dividend. And he was very quite important about, he said, you pay the shareholders according to their shareholding, the whatever's in a profit account. And the aim of that is, you know, the aim of that, you could say, well, why not just pay yourself monthly? And the aim of it is that if you paid yourself monthly the profit, it would just become part of your income and your lifestyle would expand to gobble that up as it tends to do. It's better to get that sort of lump sum every 3 months. Then you feel like, okay, actually, you know what? This business is worth running. I'm getting something extra. I'm getting something for owning it as well as running it and working in it. And that's psychologically easier. And he does it every 3 months because a year is too long, too much delayed gratification is his experience. So I thought that was a good point as well. And then you use these five accounts, your income account, your owner's comp, profit, taxes, and OPEX. And you physically move the money around in order to manage your expenses.
Cool. Yeah, I think the quarterly payment is actually a very good idea, isn't it? Because as you said there, it really rewards you and gives you something to look forward to and build towards. And as you said, as you quite rightly said, you know, if you're getting this extra profit every month, you will just increase your lifestyle, just like you got that Porsche when you started earning on the big bucks, James. And like now you just say, yeah, I've got a Porsche, so what? Whereas, you know, I'm in a 20-year-old Mercedes, and you know that just shows you the difference there between us.
That's right. Not many people know Porsche make bicycles, but it's a beauty. Okay, well, that was great. It was nice, Garrett, refreshing for me to be the one dropping all the knowledge. You know, so I hope everyone appreciates that. Now, it's not always Garrett who knows everything, and I'm enjoying
my
knowledge.
I know nothing, James. I barely know my own stuff, but yeah, it's great. Fair juice. Yeah, it was a good book, actually. Good book to bring up, and has a lot of good points in it that people should have a look at. Obviously, read our book first. It is the main book. It is from the main man here, and give us a shout at james.kennedy@procurementexpress.com.
Until next time, stay profitable.
All right, folks, there you have it. That wraps up our conversation with James Kennedy and Garrett Carher. They shared a ton of valuable insights and advice today as they reviewed the book Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes. And don't forget to click on one of those links to get a free chapter from the book Profit Leaks by James Kennedy and Garrett Carher. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Gross Profit Podcast.